This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the out of bounds to the freshman queen who's driving, floats it. Hey! Side of a buzzer beater with life into the Sweet 16.
That was Lisa Byington on the call for Derek Queen's game winner Sunday in Seattle. Robbie Hummel and Jalen Rose were with Lisa. Robbie joins us right now. Robbie's been on the call of a lot of Maryland's games this year. You can follow Robbie on X on Twitter at Robbie Hummel. One of the great players in Purdue basketball history as well. I was thinking about this. So you were on the call, you know, for the Trey Holloman shot Big Ten Network. What about the other three? What about the Northwestern, Ohio State? How many of the others did you catch of the buzzer?
I didn't do the Northwestern game. Yeah, I did not do the Northwestern game, and I did not do the Ohio State one. So only those two that you mentioned, the Holloman shot and then the Queen game winner.
So what did you think they were going to do with 3.7 seconds left?
Well, I had like a blackout moment, which this doesn't happen to me very often, but I didn't think they had moved the ball into the front court. It's one of those mistakes where you're like, dang, I really wish, even though I felt like I had done a good job for the game.
You do a great job. I caught that too.
It's a good learning moment for me in the sense of still only this being my seventh or eighth year of doing TV. You know, even in those moments of just holy crap, you know, like this three by Lake is incredible. You know, it's just an incredible play by Colorado State. So I really wish that Lisa or Jalen had been like, hey, moron, they moved the ball. Cause like, in fairness to them, I haven't worked with them all that much. You know, Lisa right. a little bit. Like if that's Jason Benetti, he's like, hey, idiot, you know, like because right. we've worked together so much. And granted, it's on me to know that. But, once I realized that the ball was into the front court, I think the Queen ISO from the middle is brilliant. And I know Kevin was pretty honest about saying, you know, who wants the ball, and Derek is the one who said it. But just in the sense of you're so afraid from anything about giving up an open three. You obviously know what the score is, so you can't give up a two either. But it's going to be one-on-one. Like your spacing is in a place that is so good. And whether that was going to be Gillespie or whoever, or if you're going to go Julian Reese, but I just think that the fact that they put Derek Queen in space and said, go make a play, you know, you're our most talented guy, it was really thought out well by Kevin, and the execution is obviously special. The travel, no travel thing, you know, it's what a crazy debate. I would have never, from watching that live, thought that travel was in play. But I guess when you start slowing it down, it does look a little weird. What an incredible individual play by Derek Queen to send his team to the second weekend.
Yeah, I think somebody did something where they put together a lot of shots like that. And if we, I just had John Fant on the show, and I've talked about it all week since, the first 2 days of the week anyway. that may have been called in 1988, you know, but for the last 30 plus years, you don't see that get called at all. By the way, I wanted to ask you, because you were a phenomenal college scorer, the angle in which he got to became, you know this, it's more severe for a bank shot. You know, your margin for error grows as you get closer to the baseline. It had to be in that spot. It was, I mean, he squared up perfectly. He, you know, talk about someone who's done it. Talk about that shot and the degree of difficulty.
Well, I think, and besides the fact that your angle is getting squeezed, the deeper you're getting of going off the glass, you know, you think about a right-handed player driving to his left hand and kind of going back against the grain. You know, it's not an easy shot, and especially not an easy shot for a dude that's 6'11". You know, like it's such a high-level move. It's a pro move. You know, there's three letters that come to mind when you see a guy do that. It's the NBA. He is an NBA player. And just to see kind of – I think the cool thing is he's elevated his play from – and it's crazy because he started out with a 20-and-20 game. But the way that he's grown, the fact that Derek Queen has been so coachable – the fact that he's been willing to listen to Julian Reese, and I give Julian a lot of credit because I think his maturity has come a long way, you know, to where he's mentored Derek. And I think something that's maybe not being talked about enough, that was as visibly frustrated as I've seen Derek. You know, he almost got a technical foul in one of the timeouts, and they were holding him back from one of the refs. To kind of come back from that and gather yourself, because, and I say that because he's been so calm and with the smile and everything all year. You know, he's a pretty chill guy. But he was a little bit out of sorts and had taken some wild shots. But when they needed him most, that dude came through. And that's what pros do. And he is a pro.
You know, you talked about this. You've talked about it all year long. And I think it just is worth emphasis on the maturity and the growth of Juju Reese, of Julian Reese.
Yes.
I mean, he scored six of their last eight, four of which came from the free throw line, and you know what a disaster that was for two straight years until this year. I mean, how about the fact, we've talked about this before, but in the biggest moment of his career, he stepped to the free throw line and knocked down four out of four.
Yep. Yeah, and, you know, he had struggled the game prior. And
yes.
I remember Kevin actually saying to him at the practice on Saturday, Julian, get some free throws in, get that rhythm back. And clearly he did. But the pressure of the moment, right? Like that's where it's one thing to make four free throws in a conference game in January. You know, it's another thing to do it in the second round in a close game where everything's on the line. And, you know, he's worked so hard to get rid of that hitch. I remember watching him shoot as a freshman and thinking, wow, he's got a chance.
Exactly.
And then he developed that kind of hitch, and it's like, man, he does not have a chance. but he's gotten rid of it, and it looks so much better. And you can tell he's put a lot of time into it, and he's built a lot of confidence. He's just done a really nice job of kind of figuring out what he needs to do to make free throws. And I also think, you know, the fact that they went to him in the first game on Friday, you know, they turned it over. They were totally out of sorts. They were totally out of sorts in that first game to start. And they went to him, and he settled them down, and then it was just, they went guns blazing from there. So he's come a long way maturity-wise. He's somebody that you can count on. He's a good leader. He's been great for Derek Queen. I just, you know, and at times in his career, he ran a little bit hot. You know, he'd get technical fouls. He'd get into it with the refs. He's been awesome this year. I think he got snubbed from the all-defensive team. You know, he leads the conference, or led the conference, I should say, in defensive rating. I just think he anchors one of the elite defenses in the Big Ten. And the fact that he didn't get rewarded for that is kind of a shame.
Yeah, agreed. I want to ask you about the Neek Clifford elbow at Jordan Geronimo.
Yeah.
From this standpoint, you guys sit there – multiple times a game as referees come over to look at something on the monitor. I just had Kevin Willard on the show, and I asked him. He didn't find out about it until halftime, and he essentially said, Jordan, you got to do a better job of telling us. Like, lie on the floor and look like you're dead or whatever. But do you get a chance to say something to the referees about what you've seen on replay?
Do you recall the Corey Alexander clip of Tony Bennett like screaming at him for impacting the game, for calling them over to review a couple of, maybe it was last year. I don't want to be that. I was shocked that they were not reviewing this. I would never call them over. Now, if they came up to me and asked, do you guys have a look? I would absolutely say yes. And you know, sometimes their DV sports stuff isn't working great, and they ask stuff like that. But I would not call them over because I don't want to be Corey in that example.
Calling them over wasn't really what I was looking for. I'm curious as to whether or not there's any interaction. Like, they come over and say, did we miss something? Or, you know, what happened to Geronimo?
That certainly happens. That's happened where refs have asked, especially on, like, goaltends or play, maybe block charges, which, you know, I think all of us are at some times sort of guessing on. But, no, I was shocked from a standpoint of Geronimo. He's got to, and if that's what Kevin said, that he's so right. You know, you've got to have some sort of awareness. If you just got bowed in the head, I'm going to the ref. I'm going to my coach. I'm telling anybody that will listen. You know, look, I just got elbowed in the face. You probably need to act like it hurt. I can't believe it didn't. I mean, Nate Clifford I think it would have been a flagrant too had they went and reviewed it. He looks at him and just cocks back and drills him in the head. And for everything that we've seen this year, it would have at minimum been a flagrant one. I'm guessing it would have been a flagrant two because it looks like there's an excessive intent there, because you see him kind of looking over and there's a windup. And if unnecessary and excessive are the two words, it would have fit that category.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I said regular season game, that's a flagrant two. He's gone. I don't think in the NCAA tournament you're going to take their best player off the floor. But it's obviously a flagrant one and a big spot, because it's two free throws in the ball, and they ended up being down 7 at half, and it probably would have gone to halftime as a 1 or a 2 or a 3 point deficit, more likely than not.
It's crazy with all the reviews we have, Kevin, that we would not have reviewed that. That should have been a review.
Yeah, we're talking to Robbie Hummel. So what kind of shot do you give them against Florida Thursday night?
I do feel like for every team that makes a run in the NCAA tournament, you have to find a way through a game, especially for the higher seeds. You have to find a way to win a game that maybe you don't deserve to win, or you just you don't play your best basketball. And I certainly do not think that was Maryland's best basketball, especially from their backcourt. You know, those guys looked a little bit shell-shocked, and good to see Rodney Rice make a shot. He'd struggled since that Illinois quarterfinal game, and he finally saw the ball go in. But Florida's really good. They're really athletic. They are good on both sides of the basketball. But as long as Maryland's out of foul trouble, I love this team. You know, I think it's unfortunate that with the season they've had, they're probably drawn one of the favorites here. But you got to beat really good people at some point. And when you're a 4 seed, that time is the Sweet 16. I think they have a chance. They've got great front court play. They've got great guard play. The depth thing does scare you a little bit, because Florida can wear you out. And certainly foul trouble will always be a concern for this Maryland group. But I think Kevin does a phenomenal job. I don't think he's gotten the credit that he deserves for building this team, for coaching this team. They defend you. They can score in a variety of ways. Yeah, they've got a great chance. And it's going to take probably one of their better performances of the year, because I think Florida's that good. But they can beat them. I think that Maryland can be a Final Four team.
You know, you said something that I agree with, and you've watched them just as much during the course of the year. You've called so many of their games. They didn't play anywhere near their best on Friday or on Sunday, right?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Now, the one thing that I would say, and I was surprised that they looked a little nervy to start the Colorado State game, because you've already got that out of your system. You know, like, I know their NCAA tournament experience as a team is not a lot outside of Julian and Geronimo. That's actually none. But I get the first game. I was a little surprised that it was again on Sunday. So hopefully that's gone. But no, not nearly their best basketball. I've seen them play better on whether it's on TV, in person. Yeah, they can play better, and hopefully the nerves are gone. They should be. You know, you've made it through a weekend, you've found a way, and you've played the best game of the tournament, you know, in the sense of the most exciting game, found a way to win that. So hopefully it's play with reckless abandon, nothing to lose. You know, Florida's a favorite. We've had a great season at Maryland, but it's time to just kind of unleash that thing and, you know, go out with a feeling of we're going to go out here and leave it all on the floor.
Who's got the best chance of the remaining four Big Ten teams to get to next weekend and beyond?
That's a good question. I probably – let me look at the bracket here just because.
Auburn, Michigan, Ole Miss, Michigan State, yeah. in the South. And then obviously Maryland and your alma mater's got Kelvin Sampson in Houston.
Yeah, that's a tough matchup for Purdue from just right. The athleticism and isolation ability that Houston has. I'm going to go Michigan State. You know, they've got Ole Miss here. Ole Miss I saw back in December. They're not the deepest team, but certainly have some dynamic guards. But I think just, yeah, Michigan State, they'll have to beat Auburn. I think it's them. I think that with the way that they've played all year, and some of the things they do well, and the way they guard, that gives them the best chance. Purdue-Houston is a tough matchup for the Boilers. Certainly Maryland with Florida, you're going up against one of the favorites, and I do think that Maryland can win, but it would certainly be an upset. And Michigan-Auburn, that the way that Michigan turns the ball over, that's concerning against Auburn's pressure, no doubt. So I'll go the Spartans.
Boy, Michigan really turned it around, didn't they? Because they were flailing at the end of the regular season.
You know, it's interesting. Dusty talked about the Big Ten tournament, about how important it was to just kind of have a week leading into the Big Ten tournament because they didn't play till Friday in order to kind of get right. But Trey Donaldson's been so much better. He was struggling and not playing well, and they were getting the production from their bigs with Wolf and Golden, but their backcourt was just not getting it done. And they've been better. They've looked better offensively, but you're totally right. You know, you look at the way Maryland went in there and beat them, and the game at Michigan State, end of the season, it was not going in a positive direction.
You know, your alma mater, Purdue, Matt Painter's always been one of my favorite coaches to watch from afar. You played for him, loved you as a player. I've told you that before. Unfortunately, you had those injuries. But, like, in watching them recently, to me, Braden Smith isn't scoring enough. And I'm actually... I thought he deserved Player of the Year in the Big Ten. I'm not going back on that, but I think it's been his play that is most concerning about Purdue's chances moving forward. What do you think?
He has not shot the ball well, and he was so good all year with his pull up and shooting it from three, and his percentages over these last five games have not been good. You know, the thing that's really carried them have been some of their role guys have stepped up, and Trey Coffin-Wren has played like an All-American. You know, he's kind of flown under the radar, but I'm doing the indie games for radio, and on the plane home from Seattle, I was making my Purdue kind of game sheet. His run of 20-point games is pretty insane. You know, I don't think he's probably being talked about enough. But he's been a load to deal with, and yeah, I think that if they're going to have any chance against Houston, Braden Smith is going to have to play his best game of the year. Now, the thing that's concerning is if you run any pick and roll, you know, the two things that Purdue does a lot, isolation post-ups for Trey Coffin-Wren, pick and roll for Braden Smith, both of those situations are going to bring on the most intense traps you're going to see all year long. They're going to trap your pick and rolls. They're going to post-trap you. So they're going to get the ball out of those guys' hands. Now, the thing is, if you can make the next play and get the ball to their side, you're going to have some open shots. If you can handle the initial surge that Houston will bring, there's going to be some things on the other side for some guys. But you're going to have some role guys step up, and you also have to have your scores, you know, be okay within those situations. I've got to move it. You know, and then also, Houston, it's one of those things where you play a team that wants to pressure you. You're going to have some guys make some individual plays. It's kind of like Duke used to do to you. You know, we played Duke when I was a sophomore in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, and I was blown away. We got our ass whooped. And it was one of those games where they were ranked like fourth, we were eighth, they come into Purdue, And you think about Duke, and this is the team with John Shire and Kyle Singler and those guys that won it all the next year. But they get this type of atmosphere every place they go. You know, like it was the biggest game of the world for us. And for them, they were seeing that whether they went to Maryland or they went to Purdue or they went anywhere, right? Like, that's just what they would get. I was blown away with how it was basically like, we will take you out of all of your plays and you have to have guys just make one-on-one individual efforts. And I think with Houston, that's certainly something that comes into play as well.
Yeah, you know, you've been in Xfinity when it's been great, but I promise you, it's never been over the 11 years of being in the Big Ten, it's never been like it was in the old ACC days when Duke or Carolina came into the building.
No question. No question.
If you can imagine that. All right, who's the best team left in the draw, and is there a matchup that you'd love to see from this point forward?
I think it's got to be Duke, honestly. I didn't watch him a ton this year, but I watched him for the Illinois game, which was, so maybe my perspective is like crazy skewed from that, but it was like, my God, they're huge. They have a generational talent. They have, you know, they have guys like a Mason Gillis who come off the bench, or Sion James that have been around forever. Mason's played in the Final Four. They've got leadership. Tyrese Proctor is a guy that was supposed to be in the NBA 2 years ago, but has now seemed to kind of figure it out. They just have studs. And I've known John Shire since high school. We played against each other a lot in AAU. And, you know, I always joke with John. He beat me in all the games that mattered, you know, the games at Purdue, and then they beat us in the NCAA tournament. And I beat him in all the games that didn't. You know, AAU basketball, we'd beat the Illinois Warriors. We beat him in Spain, you know, which it's like, who cares? I beat him in a pro game over there. But I had dinner with him. We had the same agent. We were both rep by Mark Bartlestein. We had dinner in the Canary Islands, and I'll never forget this. We were literally out after the game, and he was telling me, I think I'm about to leave. This was in like late March or early April, about now probably. And we played him in this game, and he played in Maccabi Tel Aviv for a year or two, and he was in the Canary Islands playing for a pretty good team. And he told me he was leaving in the next week to go be Coach K's kind of personal assistant or whatever his first job was. And I was like, John, you're insane. Like, you're playing for one of the better teams in Europe. You live in a place that's kind of like Hawaii. It's an island off the coast of Africa
right. That
plays in the Spanish League. You know, are you sure you want to stop to go be Coach K's kind of assistant? And, man, good thing he did because he's you know, become the head coach at Duke. And, honestly, I think he's done a phenomenal job. The way they guard, and I think it's always interesting when you have players who are really more offensive-minded. Not that he didn't care about defense, but, you know, he was a guy that could put a number on you and make plays for other people. And the defense, he tried hard, but I don't think anybody looked at John Shire and said, man, what a great defender. But they guard, and they have an emphasis on it, and then they run great stuff. And I saw a clip of him coaching up his team in the locker room and talking about playing the right way, and he's just got a way about it. You know, watching that, it's like, man, he's got a really good demeanor and talking to the players of demanding a lot, but, you know, not going overboard. I think he's done a phenomenal job, and I guess if you look at their path, you know, Arizona is talented, they're athletic, but they could certainly, BYU could beat Alabama, and I think Alabama from a defensive standpoint isn't necessarily the best. So I like Duke's path, and I just think that John's done a phenomenal job, and they have a great team. So,
yeah, you know, you said you're calling the games in Indy for Westwood One. So you got Houston, Purdue, and Kentucky, Tennessee. Will Purdue, you know, Kentucky Nation will show up. Will Purdue have a significant home court advantage in that game against?
I think for the Houston game they will. But Tennessee's fan base is insane. They'll pack it. Kentucky's fan base is insane. They will. Purdue's right there. And honestly, I think over the last 5 or 6 years, Purdue's fan base has been one that travels well. It's going to be nuts. I bet the Indy organizers for this wish that they could move the court to the middle. You know, they've got it in an end zone, and it's going to be, I think there's 30,000 seats for when they do that. They could easy put that thing in the middle. Now, granted, they can't now because the ticket's sold and all. It'd be a disaster. But if they could, they could easily put 65,000 people in there. With those three fan bases, I have no doubt about it. You could have easily done that. But because it's, you know, tickets are going to get squeezed. My dad was telling me he was looking at some of the tickets, and they are incredibly expensive. And I'm not surprised, because those three fan bases will pack Indianapolis.
You know, even though this is year 11 for Maryland people in the Big Ten, I don't know a lot about the history of that part of the conference. Where is Purdue? I mean, Indiana is obviously number one in the state of Indiana when it comes to basketball fans. And the state of Indiana is just an incredible, you know, iconic high school, you know, basketball state. Where do Purdue's fans come from?
You know, a lot of them, Indianapolis, I would say, has become probably, it's still Indiana territory, but there's a good amount of Purdue people that are in Indianapolis, and then Northwest Indiana is heavy. Where I'm from is heavy Purdue. You know, you think about Glenn Robinson coming from there and some of the players they've gotten. The only really Indiana recruit that I can think of that's come out of Northwest Indiana is Matt Nover, who, if you remember Blue Chips, he played Ricky Rowe. He played, you know, he's a Chesterton guy. He played at IU. But Northwest Indiana's heavy Purdue. Fort Wayne is kind of disputed, I would say. There's a good amount of Indiana. There's a good amount of Purdue. South of Indianapolis, that is IU. You know, the fact that Trey Coffin Wren is at Purdue says a lot about Matt Painter and his staff's recruiting, because he's from southern Indiana, and I don't think that Purdue has gotten many guys out of there. You know, for the most part, Indiana was getting those dudes. But, it's amazing to me. When I was in school, I feel like Purdue had – we had great crowds at home, especially for big games. But, you know, we might be playing Iowa at the time was not good. If we were playing Iowa on a Tuesday night, we'd have, if Mackey sat 14,000, we'd get 11-5. You know, a good crowd. But we weren't going to – now they sell out the Christmas break games. The Purdue fan base has exploded. And I do feel like with Caleb Swanigan and Jaden Ivey and Carson Edwards – you know, no offense to myself, Etwan Moore, Juwan Johnson, but I don't think that necessarily we were looked at as a cool team. We were blue collar, we were good, but I do think that there's been more of a cool factor at Purdue in terms of some of the players that have come out. You know, Jaden Ivey is a lottery pick. You know, Carson Edwards goes for 40 in an NCAA tournament game against Virginia, against the Tony Bennett Virginia defense. You know, you think about some of the players they've had.
I'm blown away now.
When you see just how Purdue travels and how Purdue sells out home games, and just, I think the fan base has become, you know, I think we've become a little bit spoiled. Like some of the things you see coming off the Zach Edey run, you know, we lose a game and it's like the world is ending. You know, it's like, do we forget that there's other teams that have scholarship players too? You know, and Purdue's had a great season. I mean, they're in the second week in the NCAA tournament. But I'm amazed at how and even look at the Final Four. Granted, we hadn't been there since 1980, but I bet there was 55,000 Purdue fans at that game in Phoenix last year. Unbelievable crowd. So it's amazing. You know, Indiana still is the king, I think, Kevin. But Purdue's fan base has blown up in the last 10 years.
You could tell the excitement building, because Purdue, you know, you said 1980, and that was the Daryl Griffith, Dr. Duncanstein Final Four.
Right.
With, by the way, Larry Brown coaching UCLA in the final. But it was one of those fan bases, it's similar to Maryland before Gary got Maryland to the Final Four. They had so many teams that you felt like should have been in the Final Four, but they always came up short in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, and it had been forever, you know, when you guys got back there last year. And not only that, what happened the year before, that was, you know, a sweet kind of redemption. You know, I was just curious, and sorry for keeping you for so long, but I love having you on the show. As a high school player and playing in that Indiana high school, you know, statewide Hoosiers tournament, how far did your team ever get?
Unfortunately, we lost in the Elite Eight every year. So, and the thing is, in Indiana, it's weird. The regional, there's a morning game and a night game, and we always lost in the night game. My last high school game, I lost to East Chicago Central, who is, you know, Etwan Moore is my roommate in college. We played AU together. He knocked me out of the state tournament. And the crazy thing, Kevin, he has never once mentioned it to me. You know, and this is a guy that made, what, $50 million in the NBA, had an incredible career, kind of bounced around a little bit and then found his niche in the league and played for the Bulls and the Pelicans, the Suns, the Celtics. You know, he played all over, had an unbelievable career as a player. He has never once brought it up. And think about the way that guys kind of like needle each other. You know, I'm shocked that in the dorm our freshman year, not once did it ever come up. And he's the best. But we played at Michigan City High School, which seats about, I'd say, 8,200. And it was a sellout on a Saturday night. It's like the fourth biggest gym in the state of Indiana, fourth or fifth. And the crowd was unreal. You know, we didn't play in the regular season, even though our high schools are probably 35 to 40 minutes apart. And the crazy thing is they had Etuan. They had Kawan Short, who played 8 or 9 years for the Carolina Panthers, playing the Pro Bowl. Actually, Kawan, he went to Purdue. He could have played on the basketball team with us. He played on the younger, the 16 and under SYF AAU team. We were on the 17 team. He's a grade below us. But he could have easily played and helped our team at Purdue. He's only 6'5", but unbelievable footwork for a defensive tackle. Really, really good athlete. Light on his feet. He could have been like this 6'4", hybrid power forward that just whooped people with his physicality.
Yeah.
But he was on the team. And then they had Angel Garcia, who was like this dude that moved in, 6'10", guard skills, went to Memphis to play for Cal. So, you know, like that was my last high school game.
8,200 for the quarterfinals for the state.
Yeah, but that's in the, you know, that's Indiana. Yeah. Like that.
Would
that's
the winner
the way...
have gone to Butler, to Hinkle?
No. So the winner went on to Lafayette Jeff, which I bet is 6,500 or 6,000. And Etuan's team, I believe, beat Marion. And then our class was stacked. And then he went on to win the state championship. They beat Eric Gordon in the state finals. So
and
Eric
is the state finals. Is that what they play at Butler?
No, they don't play it at Butler anymore. They play it at the Pacer spot. But the thing was, our high school class, our Indiana All-Star team was stacked. It was Juwan Johnson, who played in the NBA, Etuan Moore, myself, Scott Martin went to Purdue in the Notre Dame, Eric Gordon still playing in the league, Jeff Teague, Matt Howard, a bunch of other dudes that went to, you know, the Butlers and Ball States of the world. But we had five or six NBA dudes on our team. And we would play Kentucky, you know, in the Indiana-Kentucky series. And it was just like their best player was Preston Knowles, who was going to Louisville. And he was like a role player there. So our senior class was stacked. The fact that Etuan won state in that year is an incredible achievement for him.
It just, I think that, you know, any basketball fan, there is, you know, there's the legend of high school basketball in the state of Indiana. And Robbie, you know this, the DMV, basketball is really the core of sports interest and sports participation in our market. I mean, you could certainly make the case that DC Baltimore combined is the best, you know, high school basketball combined area in the country, and it's such a big deal here too, so it's kind of cool to hear those stories.
And you know, with the DC stuff, I'm sorry to keep you on here but
no,
just from,
I'm enjoying,
you know, I played for Mike Jones at the Nike it wasn't the All-American camp, but it was
DeMathis,
the underclassmen
coach.
Yeah, DeMathis' old coach Mike is the man. Like the way that he coached their teams, or you look at what Durant had for his teams back when he was in high school, or even like, you know, playing AAU, whether it was the Team Mello stuff with Dante Green or some of the guys, you know, Sean Mosley and those guys, he went to Maryland, or even playing against Boo Williams. You know, we played against Boo Williams in the championship of the Peach Jam, and their starting five is Scotty Reynolds, Grievous Vasquez, Eric Hayes, Duke Cruz, and Vernon Macklin, with Chris Wright coming off the bench. You know, like it's just, and Patrick Patterson too. You had so much talent in that DC area when we were coming up, whether it was the class of 06, class of 07. We never beat Boo Williams. We had him beat in the finals of the Peach Jam and gave it away. But what an incredible class and a group of talent over a 2 year span when we were coming out.
Enjoy the games that you're calling for Westwood One. We appreciate the time. I always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. Hopefully, there's a Maryland Final Four against Michigan State. That's the way it would stack up. I'm rooting for the other Big Ten teams now. So let's get as many of them into the Final Four as possible. Thanks, Robbie.
Yep, no problem, Kevin.
Robbie Hummel, everybody. He was, I don't know if you remember Denton, he was an amazing college basketball player. He was legit, and he had multiple torn ACLs, you know, that cost him, you know, big portions of seasons. All right, we got other stuff to get to. We'll do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.